Welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. Today's show is a collaboration between KTOO and the Black Awareness Association of Juno. I'm Christina Michelle, your host, and I'm joined here today by Kelly Patterson, our co-host, and Alyssa Quintine, who is our guest. Alyssa is a community organizer and creative with the Alaska Center in Fairbanks, Alaska. So in the first segment, Alyssa was sharing with us about what she does there at the Alaska Center and her community advocacy and just helping to empower people of color. And in that role, Alyssa, I'm wondering if you can share with us some of the challenges that you see Black people, but more specifically, I'd say Black women facing in Alaska.
Yeah. So the majority of the challenges I face is around microaggressions and covert racism. This is from coworkers, from elected leaders, from teachers, mentors, everybody, you know, constantly having to prove and defend my existence as a Black woman, as a West Indian woman, as a woman of color. You know, it is already very difficult to be in the state, in cities where people that don't look like you and no really good way to share your culture or even just be around your culture. There's not a lot of women of color or even Black women in organizing roles, in political spaces of leadership, in leadership in general. There's one Black organization, or sorry, two Black organizations that are not on campus in Fairbanks. Not a lot of them can get involved in politics. You know, these politicians who are 60, 70 years old, they're not people of color. They see this short, young, loud, Bayesian woman just yelling about, you know, equity and inclusion. And they're like, what is that? It is really, really, really hard. And it's a challenge to be taken seriously. Mm. It's a challenge to be treated with respect and to be given the space to lead and not just being extracted from.
What have you done? What tips could you give them on how to ensure that you are heard and how to present yourself so that people do take you seriously? And or is it just a matter of constantly having to prove yourself?
I think part of it is that I would say that understand the systems in which you're working in. Know the people that you have to talk to, that you have to go through, and know the workarounds for sure. Because you will always get into a situation where one person who don't like you, don't like what you have to say, don't like your organization, and happens to be the one that gets to sign the paper and approve whatever you're doing. You know, but the thing is that there's always someone above them. There's always a supervisor, an ED, make go around. Do the things that you need to do, go around, right? Document, archive, everything. Keep your receipts. But know the systems, you know, that you're working into, because then that not only gives you more knowledge of how to navigate these spaces, but also how to share that with other people that are coming in right behind you, of how to navigate them as well. What people can and can't do when it is that situation where they're using their power to, you know, to discriminate you, then you got them, because you know exactly what their job is and what they are and are not supposed to do. It's hard, and of course it comes with time, but to have a strong support network, like surround yourself with people that care about you, that see you for you, that are 100% there for you, because this work is draining and you need somebody to process with. You need somebody that you can trust and just unload and just be your full self, because you can't be your full self at work. You can't be your full self in front of a legislator. Have someone that you can do that with. And of course, that takes time, but that's also part of the job, is to know who in the community are your allies, your advocates, your besties. So rely on them, you know, because this is not work you do alone. This is work you do together. So who can be in that circle with you?
That's great advice. I know that I have noticed a lot more younger people really speaking up and speaking out and advocating and doing the work that has needed to be done for years, that the older people have tried to do, and I think maybe have gotten kind of beat down maybe over time. It just seems like the younger generation has really like picked up this burden and it's just like running with it. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And I think mostly because our younger generation is now 16, 17, 18.
Yeah.
They can be going out there, you know, past their curfews and being a part of these uprisings. In addition to that, my generation and folks that are younger than me, we've grown up in crises. I grew up with the housing bubble, you know, and, you know, this generation is growing smack dab in the middle of a climate crisis.
Yeah.
You know, our futures depend on what we choose to do with the time that we have on this earth. And we have seen, and I feel, at least I feel this, have gotten frustration and so much spite and anger on behalf of our parents and our grandparents, seeing them not being able to do the things that we are doing because they were literally under a threat of death or under a threat of losing their jobs and homes. And because of that, we are in a position where that's not always the case. If we're at an uprising, we may not lose our job. And so we're going to take that privilege and we're going to say everything and we're going to do everything that our parents and our grandparents couldn't do.
Yes.
Internet is becoming more and more accessible and affordable. We're using that to our advantage.
That's right.
Because enough is enough. Enough has always been enough. But now it's time for you to understand that when we say enough is enough, we mean that.
Absolutely.
Okay. You can kill one of us and we can shut this country down. Try it again. So, you know, it's like we don't have time to play and to have these centric sort of moderate conversations. We have time for action and we have time for education and we have time for radical change. And if folks are not in the vibe of that, then simply move to the side while we go forward. That's why.
Well said, my sister. Yes.
I know that you said that you started organizing when you were 16. What did that look like? What does organizing as a teenager look like? And do you think that that's still a possibility now? Or is that like, do you think you kind of got in on a sweet spot and now people should be a little bit older? How do you feel about that?
It was weird. I think it was genetic because whenever my mom would go and vote or she would go to a protest or there was a hearing that she was going to, she would bring me along, whether I was in diapers or if I could walk. And so I think I grew up with civic engagement and just being involved as a part of my life. And I recognize that that is a privilege that I have because not all parents have that interest or even that time. And that's really what it takes is someone who is invested to teach you that. And doing that as a teenager is very weird because a lot of folks don't really see you as an organizer. They see you as a volunteer. Hmm. So it's put rubber bands on the flyers, go hand that out, you know, go talk, go testify. But I was always itching and asking for more. And I think maybe the sweet spot is that I'm just very stubborn. And so when people would tell me no, I wouldn't listen and I would go ask somebody else. And that led me to a lot of different opportunities and positions and research opportunities that I got. I would say for the most part, it was really weird, but it also took, but I guess through that, it showed people in my own community, oh, she's actually really invested in this. And it led to me getting a lot of positions later on. So it's annoying, but it shows people that you are serious about this and it changes that myth that teenagers are apathetic and they don't care. It's that, no, you've just never given them the light of day. Mm. You've always talked down to them. But when you give youth their space to figure out how they want to navigate through this world and what they want to do, you will be amazed. I mean, we shouldn't be amazed because that's what we taught them to do. Okay. It's like, right. Okay. Let them do it now. And I'm fortunate that I had people in my life that let me do it.
And I just want to be clear, when we say organizer, what are we saying? What is an organizer?
Yeah, I define someone, an organizer that takes the time and the knowledge and the resources they have to elevate, you know, you're taking that personal investment and leading other people in your community to take action.
Can you share some ideas of what we can do in our community and what our listeners can do to support the Black community and to start to do some of the work that you're doing there? How can we bring that here?
You know, see what's going on and get engaged. But always make sure that you're coming into that space as a guest and not necessarily to take over, but someone there who's to support and someone there that wants to elevate and highlight what those folks are working on. If you happen to be one of those people and looking into how you become the Black leader, figure out exactly what role you want to play. Every role in a revolution is valid. You don't always have to be the fighter. You know, you don't have to be the loud advocate like me that's, you know, out there yelling at elected leaders. But you can be the awesome auntie that's got the bomb soup that everybody comes to after a really hard testimony and just comes and eats and decompresses. You can be the researcher who is really, really good with spreadsheets and policies and can take really huge chunks of legislation and break it down into talking points. You can be the donator. You can be like money here, money there, if that's something that you have available. But it's not really finding what, it's finding how you want to support these movements. Everybody has a role and everybody has a responsibility in this. Your job is to figure out exactly how you do that. The what will always come. And don't leave the work to the organizers. You know, everybody looks at people like me and they say, oh, they've got it. I can't do my work if the community is not engaged. I can scream all I want every day about municipal elections. Please get involved in your municipal elections. Please register to vote. And if nobody registers to vote, then the people that we actually need to get in don't get in. And then we're having to deal with really, really weird, unequitable taxes and really weird legislation. And people are like, what's going on? Why is the city council doing this? And I'm like, because somebody didn't vote in municipal elections. So don't leave the work to us. Just because we're organizers and we happen to be paid or not does not mean we can do everything. You need to get engaged, whether you vote or not. Know who your leaders are. Get in connection with them. Make sure you know when their meetings are. Make sure you're attending their meetings. Make sure you know who your legislators are. When you email them, CC, if you email a committee, CC your representative, CC your senator, so they are saying, oh, that is what my constituent is worried about. Wow. Okay, things of this nature. Get engaged. It's like, I cannot do this work without you. If you don't do it with me, it don't get done.
What are some of the issues that as the Black community we should be looking at specifically in Alaska right now? Is there anything that's up that we should really be looking at and paying attention to? And this is going to affect Black people more than it's going to affect, or people of color more than it's going to affect the general population. What are some of the things that we should really be looking at right now?
For sure. I would say,
in your opinion.
Senate Bill 39, for sure. And everybody's red alarms have been going off about that bill. But if you're not familiar, it is a bill that essentially guts the opt-in option that we have, that we voted in 2016 to update voter registration in our state. And so it would essentially gut that. It would gut a lot of different municipal actions that people, that our governments can do during their elections. Even though the guise has been around trying to protect our elections from fraud, really what it does is voter suppression. We have been seeing, since we've ratified that, the automatic voter registration, we've seen record numbers of young voters, voters of color, you know, low propensity districts now starting to increase their voting statistics. And we're now starting to get a lot more data on how those particular districts are voting. We've seen record numbers in just basic registration. Like, people are now registered, which means they, oh yeah, and now I can vote. Great. We don't need that to go away. We need voting to be more accessible because we recognize that understanding how to vote is a barrier. What to bring to a voting booth is a barrier. Transportation is a barrier, but also representation and information is a barrier. And when you shut that off in a bill, that means that people of color who want to vote and have that ability now have a harder time to do it. And when we're talking about people that work on paper 9 to 5, but really 9 to 7s. And they've got kids at home and they don't know that they can vote early and they're having to wait in a line to go vote, then they're probably not going to. If they can't send in a mail-in ballot because they're absentee and they're traveling and they're military, and guess what? That's how the majority of people of color come to Alaska, is through the military, then they don't vote. You have young people that are trying to figure out, because their schools are being like, oh, you're going to vote, and here's a sticker if you vote, and you're going to get, you know, 50% added to your paper if you vote. They can't figure out, like, how to ask questions, and they get this thick manual mm-hmm. that the DOE to send out every year. Young people don't know what to do with that. What are they going to ask? It's like, I don't know who my senator, like, you know what I mean? So 39 is just not the best thing right now. We need to expand voter access, not restrict it. And the second thing I would say, we have, you know, some legislation out there, but really something that has kind of been taken out of our communities is how the climate crisis is affecting communities of color. We hear this a lot in terms of Native communities where villages are literally falling into the ocean. People are now losing their trails to flooding. They're coming up with respiratory illnesses and all sorts of chemicals in their breast milk because they're just breathing in the smog from refineries because they're literally 5 miles that way. Oh, we're not really hearing a lot on how the climate crisis is affecting other people of color. Specifically in the interior, we have the second, if not the worst, air in the nation.
Wow.
I have a heart condition that was probably caused by our air pollution. It's also genetic, so who knows? But, you know, there's a lot of people that have asthma, that have respiratory illnesses, that get lesions on their lungs. Mm. Military is not talking about that. The borough is not talking about that. And we already have to deal with medical neglect that is compounded by a pandemic and going to continue to be compounded by a climate crisis. This impacts our food. We saw the shortages that are going to happen, that happened during this pandemic. Wait until droughts really start to impact the agricultural systems and see who gets fed and who does get and who does not. We know historically that it's our communities that are first to be kicked to the side and the last to receive resources. So these are things that we need to be talking about in our own communities and not just elevating, but demanding that our elected leaders are listening to those conversations. Because if they're not going to bring it up in the legislature, then we need to bring that to them. It's much more than just sinking roads and sloughing foundations. It's how we're going to support ourselves and the water we drink and the food that we eat and the jobs that we can create. And it's like they aren't really getting that because their lives are not the ones at risk. But in reality, we're all at risk. So we need to be having these conversations. And yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take just a moment and go to another quick break. If you are just tuning in, this is a collaboration between KTOO and the Black Awareness Association of Juneau, Alaska. And we're here speaking with Alyssa Quinton, who is in Fairbanks, Alaska, doing some wonderful advocacy and organizing community work there. And when we come back, we will hear a little bit more specifically about how you can connect with her and support. We'll find that out when we come back.